The short story, Morris Crispin's. It seemed like it was always cold and damp on the days we decided to work on restoring our 90-year-old row house in Detroit's infamous Cass Corridor. This particular day was colder and damper than most. The kind of damp that cuts through you to the bone, so they say. Then there's the aroma of an old, empty house on a cold day. That musty, almost indescribable odor that either offends you or kindles your imagination. This house had plenty of that, especially the third-floor servants' quarters. To get there, you had to climb a narrow back stairway that started its ascent in the basement and the original kitchen, a la upstairs, downstairs. But it was the back bedroom closet on the third floor that stirred our imagination the most. It was there that a pungent odor permeated. The back wall of the closet had a portion of plaster that didn't match, which suggested a recent repair. Our fantasies regarding this closet were further enhanced by one of our first acquaintances in the corridor. He was Morris Crispin's, a social worker dropout who had exiled himself to the area more than 20 years before. Morris had chosen as his life's work the renovation of an old four-story apartment building located on Willis Street, directly behind our row house. Morris, to say the least, was an imposing figure. Although he was only in his mid-40s, he had a chest-length white beard and matching shoulder-length hair that led you to believe that he was much older. He appeared that day, cloaked in a long hooded coat, all 6'4" of him. He stood in the rain just off my back porch as raindrops ran down his face and onto his beard. It was a great white flowing beard, which he periodically stroked and drained of excess moisture. His speech was soft but deliberate, and every word seemed to be selected after much thought. On that day, he welcomed us to the neighborhood, but warned us of all the dangers that could beset us. We needed this, I thought to myself. "Hey, Morris," I asked jokingly, "anyone ever die in this house?" "Why do you ask?" he said with a curious twinkle in his eye. "Well, the third-floor closet has the distinct odor of someone sealed in the wall," I announced rather tongue-in-cheek. He remained silent for a few seconds and looked at the ground before him. As he did, he moved his paint-splattered, oversized work shoe in the dirt as though he was diagramming an intricate image. When he did speak, he looked me directly in the eyes and said, "This was the worst house in the neighborhood." Wonderful. I was always told it was not wise to buy the best house on the block because of resale value, but I never really relished the thought of owning the worst house. "Why do you say that?"
"Death. Lots of death. They carried more than one body out of your house. It was a drug house, a shooting gallery. Wouldn't surprise me if there were a few bodies still in there. Hell, nothing would surprise me in the corridor."
Great. Just what I wanted to hear. Then I had a flashback to an old Twilight Zone episode when a Rosicrucian passed into the walls of a house. Once inside the wall, he lost his conviction and subsequently was trapped. Could it be? Rosicrucians in the Cass Corridor? Not a chance.
"You planning on living in this house?" Crispin's inquired.
"We're thinking about it," Maggie answered, peering through our screen door. Morris then stared off into space for a moment, pursed his lips, and ran his hand down the front of his beard, again draining the moisture from it.
"It's better if they think you're crazy," he offered as he looked in her direction. "That's how I've survived 20 years down here. Everyone thinks I'm as crazy as a loon. Who knows? Maybe I am a little nuts by now. I suppose you have to be crazy to want to live here. Maybe you're crazy, too."
Then he let out one of those laughs that you only hear in movies or read about in novels. It was a great laugh. I smiled back at him. You couldn't help but smile at someone who laughed as he did. He was either indeed crazy or totally at peace with himself. Whatever the case, I knew then I liked this man. There are times in your life when you meet someone for the first time and you immediately know whether you like him or not. You know it. It's a pure gut reaction. If things don't seem right in your guts, they're usually not. Just when I was becoming somewhat secure with our new friend, he announced, "Would you like to feel where I got hit in the head with a hammer?"
With that, he pulled back his hood and placed his forefinger on the top of his head near the crown. Some guy broke into my apartment, tried to beat me to death. He hit me here with a ball-peened hammer and depressed my skull. Feel, as he gestured to me to touch the battle scar, as if I doubted him. I really didn't want to touch his indented skull. Wouldn't a handshake do? Oh, well, what the hell? I did as he wished. He was right. His skull was depressed, at least a half an inch and the size of a quarter. See? I told you so, he said, showing his pleasure with my compliance. Well, after you felt someone's indented skull, what else is there? So I bid our new friend goodbye. As he turned to walk away, he pulled his hood up over his head, and after a few steps, he stopped and turned back towards me and said, Morris. Everyone just calls me Morris. What should I call you? Douglas, I shouted back. What about her? He then pointed to Maggie, who was now standing in what was going to be our kitchen. Maggie will do, I answered. Then that's what it'll be, Douglas and Maggie. Oh, by the way, let me know if you find any bodies. And he let out with another hearty laugh as he walked through the mist back towards his apartment building. I've never kept a diary, but if I did, today I'd simply write, I met Morris.